Hey folks, this is not a regular episode of Witch Police Radio. As many of you know, I have a Patreon page, which is sort of exists for people who like the podcast and want to support it to essentially throw some change in the guitar case. And on that page, I post advance, ways to check out the episodes before they come out, a lot of bonus content, a lot of bonus episodes, all kinds of fun stuff. And so, due to some technical issues, this week we don't have a regular interview coming out, but I thought I would dig back into the Patreon archives and pull out a bonus episode that I'm now going to share on the wide release podcast. So this is something that I made back in 2022. I used to play in a band in the mid to late 2000s, I guess, called The Mouthboat. It was sort of a noisy punk inspired three piece. And the songs were mostly about outer space and the occult and things like that. And so we made a few EPs. We played a bunch of shows. And I'm really proud of everything we did with that band. And around the time I recorded this bonus episode, all of that stuff got reissued by a local label based in Gimli called Ancient Raven Records. So to coincide with the Ancient Raven release, which was sort of a collection of songs from across all three Mouthboat EPs, I decided to do this sort of lengthy discussion of what the Mouthboat was, what these songs were about, what I remember about them. And so in this episode, which again, it was originally released 3 years ago, you get sort of the entire Mouthboat discography along with some commentary. So next week, we're back to regular interview episodes, and then I'm going to do my year-end things where I make some special episodes about my favorite local albums of the year and all that kind of stuff. But this is from the archives of the Patreon, originally released in 2022, and it's sort of this overview of the Mouthboat, which is a band that I was in along with original Witch Police co-host John Ascombe, and my friend Goldwyn Miller, who was the drummer in The Mouthboat, as well as in my high school band, Grandpa's Army, which has also appeared on this podcast. So this is very self-indulgent. It's just me a few years ago rambling on about all these Mouthboat songs, but you get to hear all of them, and it's sort of a cool way to experience the entire Mouthboat discography, if you even want to call it that, in sort of one sitting. And the Patreon page, if you feel like the podcast is something you want to support, you can go to patreon.com/witchpolice, and there's a bunch of options there to support the show. You can support it every month with a buck or two, or whatever you want. You can do a one-time thing. There's free content there as well. You don't have to necessarily be a paying member to get access to some of the Patreon stuff. I've been posting monthly newsletters. The second one just came out yesterday. And so there's all kinds of cool stuff you can see there, and it just sort of gives you more Witch Police content, as if I'm not posting enough, right? So again, that's patreon.com/witchpolice. And I just want to give a big thank you to everyone who supports the show on there, everyone who has ever supported the show on there, and especially the newest patrons. I have new people signing up all the time. They come and they go. And the newest patrons are Terrence and Maxfield. So I just want to give a big shout out to those people for supporting the show and deciding that it's something worth throwing a bit of change at. So really appreciate it. Hopefully more of you will hop onto the Patreon in the new year and find benefit to it and continue to listen to the podcast and support the podcast. And I appreciate all of you. Here is the 2022 Mouthboat Extravaganza. Enjoy. Hey folks, bonus episode time. And this one's special because I get to talk about my own shitty music. One thing I'm not good at is playing music. I've been in bands many times over the years, and I'm usually the weakest link in terms of actual technical ability. But one thing I am good at is kind of self-mythologizing. As you may have seen recently, I'm putting out t-shirts for my old band Grandpa's Army, which ended in the year 2000. So the fact that I've kept harassing people about this band and pretending it was more important than what it actually was is, I guess that's a talent, maybe? But we're not talking about Grandpa's Army here. I'm sure I'll do an episode on that band later. Right now, we're talking about The Mouthboat. And The Mouthboat is a band I was in with my friends John Ascombe and Goldwyn Miller from the mid-2000s. I think the first tape we made came out in 2007, and then there was one the next year, and then there was a few years break, and we recorded a few songs for a third EP. So this was a band that I played guitar and keyboard and sang, if you can call it that. Mostly involved a lot of screaming. And it was kind of punk, kind of experimental, kind of weird. Most of the songs were specifically about outer space, except for one EP, the last one, which was very horror and occult themed. And really, it was just a way to scream nonsense about robots and spaceships and all that fun stuff over top of really, really abrasive, kind of noisy, fun music. And the real draw, I think, for the Mouthboat was always the live show. We had fog machines, we had this crazy spitting light thing we called the Space Machine, we had a robot mascot, guy dressed in a garbage can flailing around on stage. We would occasionally use projections, and we had kind of a unofficial fourth member, Trish, who would do art on a retro projector and have that kind of displayed in the background with some liquid kind of psychedelic shit happening. And we would play movies in the background from, you know, Japanese kaiju films and stuff like that. So it was a really fun, costume-heavy, effect-heavy project. And, you know, it's been defunct for a long time. Kind of when the band ended is sort of when I started podcasting, really, because I didn't have time to play music anymore, being a parent and having kids and all of the responsibilities that come along with that. I switched over from playing crappy music to making crappy podcasts, and that's where we are today. But the reason the Mouthboat is even relevant, really at all, anymore, is because a local label, a tape label based in Gimli, who you may have heard on the podcast, I've done a few interviews with the label owner, it's called Ancient Raven Records, and they were kind enough to put out kind of a retrospective collection of most of the Mouthboat's recorded output. So there's this great tape that came out, I guess it was earlier this year, on a yellow cassette. It's really cool packaging, and it's called Happy Days, and it's really just a collection of everything the Mouthboat did with varying quality kind of over those three EPs. And there's also a download that comes with it if you buy the tape that has a bunch of bonus stuff as well. We recorded quite a bit of content, you know, practices and live shows and things like that. And most of it's been available online here and there. But this Happy Days tape is a remastered edition of kind of all of the Mouthboat stuff. So what I'm going to do on this bonus podcast is kind of just talk about the songs that we did with the Mouthboat, what the background is. People, you know, seem to still have an interest in this band, which is super cool. It was probably the most fun I've had playing in a band ever. And yeah, so this is your introduction, if you haven't heard us before, to the Mouthboat, with the songs, the remastered songs, from Happy Days. So the way that the online files, the digital version of the tape, is formatted is that there's a side A, a side B, and then bonus content. So we're going to start with the songs from side A, and it's about 13 minutes of music. Once we're done that, I'm going to get back into this and give you some background about each of those songs, where they were recorded, what they're about, any interesting stories I have, and yeah, we'll go from there. Thanks.
I'm
Side A of Happy Days. So what you just heard was mostly, it was actually almost the entire EP, the first one we did called Everybody Shimmy. And so that's the first, I guess, five songs on there are the songs from Everybody Shimmy. I think it's actually the entire EP. And those songs were recorded in my basement. I was living in the West End at the time, and it was a kind of a DIY basement recording. I think that, you know, it's one of the better recordings that we had. I think we spent the most time on it over any of the EPs we made. But it was definitely recorded live. There's some out-of-tune moments, mostly on my part, and there's some weirdness. But the first song you would have heard is called Umbrella. It always kind of, to me, seemed like one of the prototypical Mouthboat songs. You know, it's really me just screaming some gibberish, and John doing some backup vocals on some gibberish. And I don't think the song is actually about anything. It's about yeah, it's just literally nonsense, which a lot of the songs were. This is maybe one that doesn't have too much of a space theme in the way that some other ones like Robot did later on. But yeah, it's just kind of probably my favorite. It was really, really fun to play. And this was the first band I was in where I was actually singing and playing an instrument as well. So it's pretty simple, and as you can kind of tell, the guitar parts are a little limited, while Goldwyn and John kind of do the important work of making the song sound good. But it gave me opportunity to scream kind of in between the guitar bits. But yeah, this was the first show we ever played was at a barn party. There was a bunch of punk bands playing at a barn party out of town, and no one had heard the Mouthwell before. We'd had a handful of practices, and people didn't know what to expect. They thought it would just be some shitty punk band, and arguably it was, but I remember a lot of people coming up to me after the show, and we started with Umbrella. I think we played maybe five songs, and people were just like, whoa, I didn't expect that to be what your band was. And I think that's kind of the cool thing about the Mouthboat, is that, you know, no matter what song we would open with, costumes and robot mascots or not, it was always pretty fast and furious and heavy, and yeah, it's just kind of a good song. I really like it. After that, My Baby's Got a Disease. This is the one that has the very obvious out-of-tune guitar in my little shitty lead part. And there's maybe three lines of lyrics in this song. My Baby's Got a Disease, Baby Take Your Medicine. That two lines, that's it. That's the whole song. And that was kind of standard, is, you know, I'm not a lyric writer. So I would often just write down a couple of nonsense lyrics, usually very, very small quantities of lyrics, and then that would be the song, written on the spot, typically as we were coming up with the song at a band practice. And I guess something I should mention too is the guitar playing. Like I've said, you know, throughout, I'm not a good guitar player, and I kind of did the most I could with what I had, but the guitar solos on these songs, which is hilarious because I'm the least talented member of the band and I'm doing solos, but the guitar solos in these songs are, it's just noise. Like, I can't play a guitar solo. So I would just basically make as much hideous noise as possible. And yeah, it was fun. I mean, I don't know if it sounds good, but definitely influenced. I mean, I hate saying this, but because it's not just being noise, but like, I really like the guitar playing on a lot of Black Flag records. And while obviously Greg Ginn is much more talented than I am at playing guitar, there's certain elements, especially like as the 80s progressed, where his solos are just really noisy and discordant and weird. And so, even though mine are terrible, it's kind of my version of that, where you're playing something that's just sounds fucking awful, but somehow still fits with the whole kind of vibe of the song. So yeah, My Baby's Got a Disease. I have no idea where the lyrics came from. I don't know what it means. I just wrote down, My Baby's Got a Disease, Baby Take Your Medicine. And I guess diseases is something that I for some reason, like writing songs about. Because Goldwyn and John from the Mouthboat did a project called Shoshaku Jushaku, kind of between Mouthboat tapes, I guess. And I contributed to a few songs, and one song, which is called Leprosy, is also about diseases. And, you know, a later Mouthboat song, Melted by Ghost Blood, could potentially be disease-related. I'm sure I've had other songs in other bands that are related to diseases. I don't know why. I think it's just kind of to do with the gross weirdness, noisy abrasiveness of the songs. And yeah, but don't go listening to the Mouthboat because you expect some kind of lyrical anything. It's raw nonsense. The next song on there was Sorry Lady, We're Not Here for the Belly Dancing. This was an instrumental, aside from the title being screamed at the end. And this was related to an incident where we were at a Indian buffet. And I barely remember the context, but I think that there was a belly dancing performance happening at this cafe, or at this restaurant. And we were sitting too close to the stage, and woman was annoyed that we were talking during the performance. And a person in our party said, "Sorry, lady, we're not here for the belly dancing." So that is literally what that's about. The riff for this comes from something. It was actually, I think, if I remember correctly. Okay, so this maybe means something to people who know me, but I also had a band called Dynamo that kind of has been around on and off, mostly off, for decades now. It's me and Rob Crooks, who is a well-known musician in his own right in Winnipeg. And at one point we had a third member and which was my cousin Matt, and we never recorded anything with him aside from just him putting down a few guitar riffs that worked well with our songs. And I'm pretty sure that the main riff from Belly Dancing is my failed remembering of Matt's Dynamo riff that didn't get used. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not stealing from anyone because I'm probably playing it wrong and it was never recorded, but it was this kind of vaguely Eastern sounding thing, and this is my terrible interpretation of it. After that is Robot, and Robot is legitimately stolen. Believe it or not, I actually took guitar lessons at one point in my life. I think I was about 10 years old, and I knew absolutely nothing whatsoever about music. So I needed to learn the raw basics of, like, even what a note was, you know, or how to tune something, or what the strings are called. And so one of the songs in this extreme basic guitar book for people who have no idea what music is was called Indian Drum, which, you know, is not culturally correct in 2022, but that riff that I play in Robot is Indian Drum from my beginner guitar book in 1992 or whatever. So I don't know if I'm stealing anyone's copyright. Maybe I shouldn't admit it, but I figure the statute of limitations is probably over. And yeah. So after that, Dark and Stormy Night. This was a fun way to open the set with, because it starts off with just noise and screaming and eventually builds and builds and builds and builds into a song. So the words in this, the lyrics, Dark and Stormy Night, people in Winnipeg, I'm assuming you're all in Winnipeg, but if you're not, there is a underneath the Manitoba Museum, there is a science gallery called Touch the Universe. And back in the early 90s, there was a computer there, which at the time, I guess, was the height of technology. And you could adjust the pitch and speed and volume and stuff of this computer that was reading text to speech. And because it was, you know, 91, 92, maybe even earlier than that, it wasn't very good. And the story it told, which you could mess with, and it was a dark and stormy night. A band of robbers were sitting around the campfire. The leader said, "Jack, tell me a story." So Jack began. And then that would loop. And you could, you know, fuck with it and make it low and high and fast and slow. And that was my favorite part of that gallery. There was all kinds of cool science experiments and a mirror room and everything else. But that stupid computer was always my favorite bit. And I would sit there for ages just pressing volume and pitch and speed and everything on that story, which repeated over and over and over and over and over. And I think it's long gone. Like, I've taken my own kids to that museum, and there is nothing like that currently there, but I have that story embedded in my brain, and it's never leaving. So I needed lyrics. Those are the lyrics. And then the chorus is me and John yelling, "We have ways of making you talk," which has nothing to do with the Jack story, but it just sounded cool. And I still really like how we have we start saying that line at different times, so it kind of, yeah, just a cool song. And then that song, which you don't hear on the tape, but you do hear on the original version, is it devolved into this extremely long, like, noise thing. There was a funk part, if you can call it that. There was, like, a bit where I'm just pressing buttons on a keyboard that repeat numbers in a computer voice. So there's this one, 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 stuff like that. And it just goes on for a really long time. And then I start screaming something about eggnog tasting like milk and juice combined, which is something that I believe. I think eggnog is disgusting, and to me it tastes like a mixture of milk and orange juice. I don't think that version is on what you just heard, but if you want to hear it, I'm sure I can get you a copy. Yeah. So those are the songs from Everybody Shimmy, which came out in, I believe, 2007. So up next on that side of the tape is some songs from our second tape, which was called My Teddy, which came out, I want to say the next year, I want to say 2008. This one was recorded probably in my basement again. I barely remember doing this, but these are songs, this is kind of our next batch of songs. We played the previous ones at every show over and over again, and then we finally wrote some new stuff. And these songs are better. They may not be as catchy as Umbrella or Disease, but they're better songs, I think, just like in terms of the way they're written. We got better. Well, the other guys were already really good at their instruments. I maybe got better, maybe a little bit at writing. not lyric-wise, but maybe? I don't know. I think they're just more detailed. There's more parts. It's just more interesting. So first one is Artificial Source of Light. This is a song that when we did it live, I would play keyboard and guitar on. And I have limited skill in both, which you can hear here. I'm using some weird French horn sound effect on the keyboard for that part. But yeah, this is a song that I think what happened was John and Goldwyn recorded the bass and drums for it, and then they sent it to me. And I remember, because I remember listening to their parts of the song and then writing down whatever nonsense came to mind for the lyrics. And then even recording, and I don't know where this recording is, but recording myself screaming quietly because my kids were sleeping, or kid at the time was sleeping. Or was she even born yet? Either way, I remember sitting in my basement recording vocals for this for a demo version and sending it back to them, and they liked it. And yeah, this is kind of one of my favorite songs. It was really fun to play, and a lot of people liked it. Unfortunately, the record is like all this stuff. I mean, it's recorded live. The quality is not great. We did it on four tracks or maybe a computer. I think we did this on a computer, and then someone rented equipment, like a software and stuff from Long McQuaid maybe, to make it happen, and none of us knew what we were doing. So it's questionable quality, but it's still pretty rad. It's a great song. Stubbs, another one that comes from that session. It was a thing we just kind of made up, and I added, as always, random lyrics to it. Like I said in the beginning, we used to have video from Japanese movies play at some of our shows. I was really into Godzilla. I still am. I've been into Godzilla my entire life. And I was watching a bunch of Gamera movies at the time. And so the lyrics of this song are related to watching a Gamera movie. Probably Destroy All Planets, because I think I say that in the song too. You know, obviously Gamera is a friend to children and he's a good character, but I make him stomp the city in the beginning of the song. But who cares, because, yeah, you know. Then the last song on this side, and this is strictly because the timing worked out. I mean, it's a cassette. We had to make sure with Ancient Raven that we could fit as many songs on as possible on either side of the tape. So this next song is Ectoplasm, which is from the last EP. And it's kind of out of place here chronologically, but it was just a short song that fit. I really like it. It's that album was super fun to make. For some reason, they let me mix this, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. The drums sound like absolute garbage. Like, the playing is phenomenal. Goldwyn is probably my favorite drummer that I know personally. But, like, I don't know what I'm doing with recording equipment. And so I've heard a lot of people tell me that they love this tape and the songs from it and everything, but the recording and the mix is bad, and that's on me. Just trying to get it done fast. The band wasn't active when we made this. We had, like, a weekend to write and record a whole EP. And, yeah, this is me rushing to get it out and not knowing what I'm doing. So, the song is awesome, super fun to play, but yeah, the recording is kind of, and as such, because this is, stuff from the third EP, we never played this live. I don't think we played any of the songs from that EP live, which is unfortunate because I think it was another step forward in terms of, writing and stuff, but yeah. Anyway, that's side A.
How did it feel to you?
Let me think.
Don't think.
Feel. It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glow.
We'll be right back. The spirit world is real. And we are not to go into that spirit world because we're going into Satan's domain.
So, side B. Side B opens up with two songs that were recorded. Actually, I think three songs that were recorded live on air at CKUW. I'd have to give a big shout out to Kent Davies and Daryl Riley for their show Peg City Groove, which for some reason kept having us on. Kent had us on Amateur Hour too. The Mouthboat was just really a good fit, I guess, for their weird campus radio shows. And so this is some stuff we recorded live. I think it was over Christmas or something. I don't know. On CKUW, we had a whole interview and we did a whole set. And these are the only songs that still exist from that recording. And when we played live, Bobby Orshit and Goudrop always blended together anyway. Bobby Orshit has samples in it, which we actually played live on stage. Goldwyn would bring a laptop and trigger the samples before the song started. And that would kind of go through the first part while he was playing drums. And this is maybe a rare song where the lyrics actually rhyme. I mean, the lyrics are monumentally stupid and meaningless. But, like, I don't know why Bobby Orr either. I don't know. Bobby Orr. Why not? Number four. But yeah, Bobby Orr shit. And then it goes into Goudrop, which was, you know, fairly adventurous for us. And I think that that was kind of the direction that, that some members of the band wanted to go in, is just get weirder and weirder. And I probably wanted to just play punk rock. I liked the weird stuff, but I wasn't very good at it. Some of the weird stuff involved more technical skill than I had or have. So I was definitely pushing for the short, fast kind of punk songs, like some of the other ones on this side, over the more soundscapey stuff that I think the other guys wanted to do. I wish we'd headed more in their direction because we did enough punk songs. And but yeah, skill level wasn't there for me. So I loved these songs, but I wasn't very good at doing them, especially when I was switching between keyboard and guitar. And, you know, I can kind of play guitar. I'm a terrible piano player. I have no training in it whatsoever. The only understanding I have of how a keyboard works is figuring it out based on playing it on guitar first and then transposing it in my brain to where my fingers go on the keyboard. So I can play like a handful of chords, and that's really about it. But it works on this, on the way this transitions. And then transitioning into Nothing Works too. Nothing Works is probably one of my favorites as well. It was a really fun way to get people moving at the shows after they had kind of got over the initial shock of, why is there a guy in a robot costume? Why is there smoke machine? Why is there a 6 foot tall construction paper and cardboard and duct tape robot head smoking out of its nose? You know, that kind of stuff. So Nothing Works is super fun. Probably the most fun one to play aside from Umbrella. And again, the lyrics are incredibly stupid. At one point I say, the second verse of the song is literally me making up words. Badminton cheesecake, and then it turns into Chebmint and bad cake and minty bad Cheb cakes or something. I mean, it's literally nonsense, but a super fun song. And so after that, it gets into the beginning of the Spiritualism tape. And this is the one I was talking about that we recorded on a weekend. We recorded and wrote over a weekend in my garage. That's how I say it. Shut up. On Dominion Street. In 2012, maybe? I think it was 2012. And that, so that was a couple years after the band had broken up because John moved to Asia. He came back briefly. We decided to do one more crack at it and record whatever came out of it. And the songs in there are really good. And Mr. Splitfoot kind of set the tone for the whole thing, because this album is not about space and robots and all that stuff. It's about the occult. And I was kind of obsessed with the idea of... I can't remember the name of them, but there's these, the Fox sisters. There's these sisters around the turn of the century, or could have been in the 1920s or something, but it's been more than 100 years ago, back when spiritualism and seances and spirit photography and all that stuff was a thing. And they had figured out a way to crack their knee joints so it would make this rapping sound. And they had a very successful scam, basically, an act, where they would go from city to city and do these presentations, and they would get members of the public to ask questions to the spirit world, and then they would make this cracking noise with their joints under the table, and that noise was supposedly coming from Mr. Splitfoot, which was a spirit, and I think it was somehow connected to the devil or something, I don't know, whatever. But Mr. Splitfoot was the one responding with these rapping sounds, when really it was these two sisters cracking their legs under the table. And they eventually owned up to it after decades after kind of being these celebrities. So the song's not really about them. It's just, I love the idea of Mr. Splitfoot and this like hoax that stupid people believed because it was a long time ago and they didn't have science and didn't know what they were, you know, didn't know what was going on. And I like that kind of part of spiritualism and that whole era where everyone just kind of like, oh yeah, of course spirits are talking to us. It wasn't like, other than, you know, Harry Houdini, who made it part of his career to debunk it, it wasn't exactly like people were skeptical about this. It was just like, oh yeah, okay, spirits, sure. Right, obviously. So yeah, that's Mr. Splitfoot. Then we have Galactus, which is not about Galactus. I just love the character of Galactus, you know, the Marvel Comics character, world-eating. We've used the term Galactus. It actually became a project that John and I did after Goldwyn had moved away. And we recorded some stuff live on CKW as well. It was this big kind of suite of samples and synthesizers and stuff and screaming. And we made a thing under the name of Galactus. But this song is about... I'm yelling nonsense about the Sir John Franklin expedition. And the reason I guess this relates to the occult and to ghosts and things like that is because it's the same time period, essentially, as a lot of the spiritualism stuff was coming up. And there's also the concept of the polar bears. And the... Okay, so... In broad strokes, the Sir John Franklin expedition went up to the north, like the far north, trying to find the Northwest Passage, and they ended up, all of them dying. There are rumors of cannibalism, all this shit. The ships were lost for 100 years until they were found by, you know, undersea radar or whatever in the 21st century. And when I was a kid, there was these textbooks we read in history class, I guess, maybe grade 7 or so. And there was these pictures that are permanently imprinted on my brain of these preserved corpses, like mummified preserved corpses of members of the Franklin expedition. They have these terrifying smiles because the skin is all pulled back and they're frozen. They're frozen bodies. And that freaked me out and still freaks me out. And I can picture them vividly right now. And so those ghosts are in my brain, I guess, refers to that. Again, the lyrics are bad and quickly written, so I don't want to attribute too much meaning to them, but that's what I was thinking about when that song came out. And then there was also this cool thing that I didn't reference in the lyrics, but there's this painting called what's it called, like man proposes, God disposes, something like that. And it's this terrifying picture that is supposedly of the fanciful version of what happened to the Franklin expedition. And it's this ship that's shipwrecked on an icy landscape. And there's these two polar bears who are just, like, covered in blood, ripping shit up. And there's... The implication is that, like, the polar bears got to the ship and ate everybody. And it's pretty savage-looking painting. Apparently, at the time it was made, they had to hide it from Sir John Franklin's widow, who was kind of a celebrity at the time, because her, you know, very notable, successful explorer husband had gone missing. And this painting had to be concealed from her because it was thought to be too devastating for her to see this depiction of what happened to her husband and his crew. And so many years later, that painting is in a university in, I want to say, Ottawa. And there have been urban legends and rumors about this painting and how it causes people to kill themselves. Obviously, it's bullshit, but they hide the painting, apparently. Again, urban legend, right? They hide the painting when exams are happening, so it doesn't, like, convince kids to do some fucked up shit. kids, students, who are taking exams, because it's really, like, a cool painting, and it's really evil. So, yeah, I like that. That's what that was about. And then Melted by Ghost Blood is one of my favorite songs. I love the term Melted by Ghost Blood. I think it's hilarious. I got it from something I was reading online in, like, the early days of the internet. And someone was describing, I don't even remember where it was, the concept of a choose-your-own-adventure, where, you know, you take one choice and you get trapped in a jungle, you take another choice and you get melted by ghost blood. And I remember writing that down at the time because I thought Melted by Ghost Blood was an amazing name for something. Briefly, post-Mouthboat, pre-spiritualism, Goldwyn and I had a band with our friend Colin Wolf. We had maybe four practices and just the timing wouldn't work out because I had a kid, a newborn, and things just didn't end up happening. But we practiced a few times, and the band was tentatively going to be called Melted by Ghost Blood. And I wish we had kept that going, because it was really cool. We have one video of a practice, and there's a song that really gives me kind of Future of the Left vibes. And I wish we kept it up, but I couldn't time-wise. But anyway, so that song, that title got reused for the song title on this song. And that is the end of Side B.
Yeah. Do spirit entities want to communicate with us? Absolutely.
We don't really know whether spirits exist, but we're going to try and summon them. If they arrive, we don't know what they're going to do, and we don't know how to get rid of them.
They could communicate with the dead.
Can understand because none of you were there. You don't think about what's right and wrong when you're just trying to survive. Right and wrong, those are just words. They don't mean anything when you look around you and all you can see is death. And all you can feel is the hunger. What would you have done?
He just ripped me to ribbons. He chewed at my face. He plucked out my eyes. But basically, that's all there is to say about him.
Come into the cave of the bat demons. They are waiting for you. They are longing for your blood. You'll drop in to join them in horror of the blood monsters and you, a ghastly journey into the weird world of the undead.
Bye.
All right, so up next on that side of the tape is some songs from our second tape, which was called My Teddy, which came out, I want to say the next year, I want to say 2008. This one was recorded probably in my basement again. I barely remember doing this, but these are songs. This is kind of our next batch of songs. We played the previous ones at every show over and over again, and then we finally wrote some new stuff. And these songs are better. They may not be as catchy as Umbrella or Disease, but they're better songs, I think, just like in terms of the way they're written. We got better. Well, the other guys were already really good at their instruments. I maybe got better, maybe a little bit at writing. Not lyric-wise, but maybe? I don't know. I think they're just more detailed. There's more parts. It's just more interesting. So, first one is Artificial Source of Light. This is a song that when we did it live, I would play keyboard and guitar on. And I have limited skill in both, which you can hear here. I'm using some weird French horn sound effect on the keyboard for that part. But yeah, this is a song that I think what happened was John and Goldwyn recorded the bass and drums for it, and then they sent it to me. And I remember, because I remember listening to their parts of the song and then writing down whatever nonsense came to mind for the lyrics. And then even recording, and I don't know where this recording is, but recording myself screaming quietly because my kids were sleeping, or kid at the time was sleeping. Or was she even born yet? Either way, I remember sitting in my basement recording vocals for this for a demo version and sending it back to them, and they liked it. And yeah, this is kind of one of my favorite songs. It was really fun to play, and a lot of people liked it. Unfortunately, the record is like all this stuff. I mean, it's recorded live. The quality is not great. We did it on four tracks or maybe a computer. I think we did this on a computer, and then someone rented equipment, like a software and stuff from Long McQuaid maybe, to make it happen, and none of us knew what we were doing. So it's questionable quality, but it's still pretty rad. It's a great song. Stubbs, another one that comes from that session. It was a thing we just kind of made up, and I added, as always, random lyrics to it. Like I said in the beginning, we used to have video from Japanese movies play at some of our shows. I was really into Godzilla. I still am. I've been into Godzilla my entire life. And I was watching a bunch of Gamera movies at the time. And so the lyrics of this song are related to watching a Gamera movie. Probably Destroy All Planets, because I think I say that in the song too. You know, obviously Gamera is a friend to children and he's a good character, but I make him stomp the city in the beginning of the song. But who cares, because, yeah, you know. Then the last song on this side, and this is strictly because the timing worked out. I mean, it's a cassette. We had to make sure with Ancient Raven that we could fit as many songs on as possible on either side of the tape. So this next song is Ectoplasm, which is from the last EP. And it's kind of out of place here chronologically, but it was just a short song that fit. I really like it. It's that album was super fun to make. For some reason, they let me mix this, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. The drums sound like absolute garbage. Like, the playing is phenomenal. Goldwyn is probably my favorite drummer that I know personally. But, like, I don't know what I'm doing with recording equipment. And so I've heard a lot of people tell me that they love this tape and the songs from it and everything, but the recording and the mix is bad, and that's on me. Just trying to get it done fast. The band wasn't active when we made this. We had, like, a weekend to write and record a whole EP. And, yeah, this is me rushing to get it out and not knowing what I'm doing. So, the song is awesome, super fun to play, but yeah, the recording is kind of, and as such, because this is, stuff from the third EP, we never played this live. I don't think we played any of the songs from that EP live, which is unfortunate because I think it was another step forward in terms of, writing and stuff, but yeah. He goes to the ghost, and 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 he goes to
on the download, Ancient Raven Records, Jonas at the label, called it Side C, which is 10 bonus tracks. And these ones are just kind of random live recordings or songs that we didn't really like so much, or I didn't really like so much, because I kind of put the track list together for the album, that didn't really make it onto the tape proper. I think that the, how many we got here? 14 songs we have on Happy Days are pretty definitively the best Mouthboat tracks. But these are just some bonus things, you know. And there's an extra 25 minutes of bonus shit, so buckle up. But I'm going to just give you some quick explanations of each one instead of just giving you a chunk of music. So first thing on here is a song that was the last song on Spiritualism. There was a time when we recorded this, and I still kind of feel this way, where I was obsessed with the chipmunk voice. I love the idea of singing, rapping, screaming, whatever, in the stupid high-pitched chipmunk voice, which may go back to my love of that computer at Touch the Universe, I don't know. But this is a song we did. Goldwyn and John made a really cool kind of groove for an attempted Mouthboat song. Time constraints meant we couldn't finish it, so we just had this bass and drums thing. So I recorded myself, quote-unquote, singing with the chipmunk voice over top of it. And our friend Shayna was over, and she plays saxophone. So we gave her sax, put a microphone up to it, and she recorded some sax on this. It's stupid. It's probably the worst Mouthboat song in the entire catalog, in the sense that it's really just me making nonsense noises while everyone else plays instruments well. But yeah, that's what it is. So Up next, you get the ending of Dark and Stormy Night. Like I said at the beginning, the version of Dark and Stormy Night that was on the actual tape is only a partial version. There's this extended outro with screaming and the keyboard noises and feedback and things like that, and this is it. So it's not the whole song, it's just kind of the ending of the song. Actually, no, now that I think of it, it is the whole song. Starting at the very beginning, but you get the extended outro. So this is the mastered version of that weird, lengthy Dark and Stormy Night. So this next one is an instrumental track called Gay Magique. I don't know why it's called Gay Magique. I didn't write it. My only contribution to this song is playing drums, which I'm even worse at than guitar. But this was an instrumental that John and Goldwyn wrote. Goldwyn moves to guitar for this. There's a sample, and I am just keeping a rudimentary beat on drums. It was something that was a staple of our live sets at the end there, but I never got recorded for whatever reason. Not that it was a bad song. I really like it, and it was super fun to play live, but yeah, it's Gay Magique. It's the only version that we have recorded, I think, from all of our live shows is this one, which was at the Label Gallery in 2008, and it was right at the end of the year. It was John's last show before he moved the first time, and yeah, Gay Magique. We didn't do a lot of covers with this band. For the most part, it was original songs. We did, the very, very early days, a version of Territorial Pissings by Nirvana, just because it was easy to play, and I didn't need to be able to sing on key for it. But we also did a cover of a Neil Young song, which sounds nothing like a Neil Young song when we get finished with it, but it's The Loner, from the first Neil Young record in, what year is it, 67? Obviously, that's a folk record. It sounds nothing like this, but I always love the song, and it's basically me yelling the lyrics out while playing generally the chords of the song, sort of, and John doing some really cool stuff on bass and Goldwyn doing some really cool stuff on drums. We didn't record this for any of the EPs, but I always liked how it sounded. We played it live quite a bit, and I'm a big Neil Young fan, so being able to cover one of his songs as someone who is a terrible guitar player and a terrible singer was kind of nice. It's some kind of version of Artificial Source of Light from a live show. I'm sure at one point I knew which live show it was from, but in 2022, July, end of July, I have no idea. It's from a live show. Great song, fun song. As I've said before, I really dig it. So yeah, hope you do too. We'll be right back. Nice. This is a fun one. A friend of ours, who maybe is a friend of yours too, if you know him, I'm not sure, Henry Beckwith, he now lives in Toronto, and he does all kinds of... for years, he was a tour guy. He was a tour manager. He played in a bunch of bands. He's a really good organ keyboard player. And he liked the Mouthboat. While he was still in Winnipeg, he came to at least one or two of our shows. He dug what we were doing. And so he wanted to add some keyboard, some proper keyboard, not my shitty bing, 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 bing stuff, to some of our songs. So we made this weird online-only three-song EP called The Mouthboat Meets Dr. Hankenstein. And so Hank added really cool organ to all these songs, and I always really liked it. I thought it really added like kind of depth to these songs that were good but a little thin. And so this is what he did with Umbrella and Disease, and there might be another one on this bonus tracks part, I'm not sure, but basically he fleshed out the songs, and it would have been cool if we had still kept going as a band, and maybe we could have incorporated some of this stuff into the actual live show. Not with him, because he had moved away by that point, but maybe I could have learned how to play. I don't know. Someone could have played the keyboard. But yeah, these are awesome. It's a really cool way to add another dimension to what we were doing. Some more live stuff. Again, I don't remember what show it's from. You've already heard the real quote-unquote song earlier in this tape, but you know, good times. The live stuff is super fun, and it was really fun to play. I miss playing shows. That's the one thing I miss, I think, the most about being in a band. I don't miss rehearsing. I don't miss starting songs. I don't miss, killing my vocal cords, but I do miss playing shows. It was a lot of fun. Maybe one day when I'm like 55, I'll start a band again, and it'll be me screaming with a bunch of other old dudes. Who knows? We'll see. But yeah, live stuff. Now, this isn't technically a Mouthboat song. As I mentioned earlier, there was an EP, or an album actually, that John and Goldwyn did with a bunch of guests. It was called Shoshaku Jushaku, and it was songs that two of them wrote over a period of time, recorded, and then various people came in and did vocals on it. This song is called Leprosy. It's me singing, if you want to call it that, over a Shoshaku Jushaku song. And kind of the funny thing about this is, as people who know me well know, I don't drink. I just don't drink alcohol. And I haven't for a long time. And this recording is the last time I was drunk. So there's not many recordings of me being drunk because it's not something I do and haven't done for a really long time. And when I did, it was kind of pre-social media era anyway. So none of that's been documented. Except for this song, which is me. I'm pretty drunk and I'm screaming about leprosy. And it's maybe my favorite vocal performance I've ever done, because of how over the top and ridiculous it is. And these again were lyrics that I wrote in a few minutes, a few seconds really, while listening to the song. Rob Crooks was there. He appears on a bunch of songs on the Shoshaku Jushaku record as well. He didn't sing anything on this track, but it's me screaming, and then John added the backup vocals later. But it's wild. It's just ridiculously out of control, and it would have been a fun one to do live if this had been a Mouthboat song. And the reason it's included here is because it's all three members of the Mouthboat. And aside from me not playing guitar on this, we're all doing our own instruments that we did in that band anyway. So it's basically like a latter-day Mouthboat song that never existed as a Mouthboat song. So I hope you dig it. It's really funny. And I'm happy that, you know, this recording of me being so out of it exists, because it's hilarious and I love it. We'll be right back. that's the Mouthboat. There's one track that didn't end up on the tape, either the tape proper or the digital download with the bonus tracks, and I think it was just some kind of problem with the file. But it's a song I'm going to play now to end this off. It's called The Space Machine, and it was a really, really sample-heavy thing we did. We sampled a bunch of weird stuff from some jazz records I have, and some ska records and things like that, and so there's horns in it that are kind of tweaked, and it was really, we used to record a lot of jams of all the multiple practices, and this is a song that was recorded and never went anywhere, but me and Goldwyn, I think, I don't know if John was there, but we added a bunch of music to it, so a bunch of samples on top of it, and vocal samples and things, and it's pretty fun. So it's not technically available anywhere properly, but I'm putting it on this podcast because it's awesome, and I think you might enjoy it. And The Space Machine was the name of our little swirly light thing that we used at every show on stage. It was called The Space Machine. And so this song is a tribute to that. And if you liked any of this, you know, you have the songs now on this podcast, and you probably heard them elsewhere, but I would really encourage you to buy a tape. You can get it from Ancient Raven Records, which is based out of Gimli, Manitoba. Jonas Scott, who is the creator of the label, he has put out some of his own excellent music as Van Allen on that label. He's put out tapes by the famous Sandhogs, by Smokey Tiger, all kinds of cool stuff. And I'm not sure how active he is at the moment. There was kind of this flurry of activity near the beginning of the year, and things have slowed down in terms of the release schedule for Ancient Raven. But he's also releasing a vinyl edition of a classic 1970s record by a Gimli folk artist called Saul Sigurdsson. And by the time this comes out, that should be, you know, a month or two away. So keep an eye out for that. Look up Ancient Raven Records on social media and online. And yeah, Jonas also remastered, or did the best he could remastering, because the songs were so shitty quality, the Mouthboat songs. So the reason they sound even remotely good is, you know, audio quality wise, is because he worked some magic on there. So please check them out. Support local labels. And I appreciate you giving the time to listen to the Mouthboat, and especially for supporting the podcast too. I know I've been a bit lax on some of the bonus episodes, but this is the first of two that are going to come out in the next few days, and hope you enjoy it. Thanks again.